Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. They come in peace. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
So that was footage of 45-year-old Charles Hickson, a man describing a 1973 alien encounter while under deep hypnosis. And that kind of sets the scene for this episode here. It is creepy. It's unnerving. It's specific. This 45-year-old Mississippi shipyard worker would do everything imaginable to prove his story, including share these details under hypnosis. He participated in hundreds of interviews, took lie detector tests, and even agreed to that hypnotherapy session. His story begins on October 11, 1973, when Hickson and his coworker, 17-year-old Calvin Parker, went fishing, picking their spot on the west bank of the East Pascagoula River in Jackson County, Mississippi. As the dusk fell, the two heard something odd, a slight buzzing sound in the sky. Looking up, the seasoned fishermen saw something they could barely believe, a football-shaped craft hovering above them. It's like the start of every UFO encounter, but this one would change their lives and become one of the most well-documented abductions of all time. Today on Ghost Town, the Pascagoula incident. So what do you think when you think of a classic UFO encounter? What comes to mind?
Spaceship, yeah, getting abducted. Mm-hmm. It's in a field, mm-hmm. or it's rural.
Yeah, exactly. So around 11 p.m., Hickson and Parker arrived at the Jackson County, Mississippi Sheriff's Office to report an extremely strange experience that they had just had. According to law enforcement, the two were crazed, almost in shock, nervous, but they told authorities that they had been fishing off of the Pascagoula River that evening, and just a couple hours earlier, they heard a whirring, whizzing sound. Then they saw two flashing blue lights in the sky, followed by an oval-shaped object approximately 30 to 40 feet across and 8 to 10 feet high. Terrifying. Terrifying, and even more terrifying, the object comes closer to them. Out of the craft, three creatures glide down to the men, carrying them back to their space vehicle. This is Hickson in 1973.
Blue light, it had blue flashing lights as it was, you know, approaching the ground, but then they went out, and when the opening appeared, some source of light came from the inside. It was just almost blinding.
In fact, for about 3 or 4 days, I had something like a bad welding flash in my eyes.
And then there was Parker, who found himself paralyzed, but his terror was gone, he says. Here is Parker talking about the event in 2019.
Felt a shot immediately or something in my arm, and it just calmed me. It's like a calming agent. So this thing carried me to the steps of the craft.
Hickson and Parker encountered three of these creatures, again, the ones that had ushered them inside, with pinchers, as you heard during this episode's opening. Here's Hickson talking again about it. The creatures took them aboard the UFO and subjected them to an examination. Hickson said he was examined by a robotic eye, and Parker said he was given a kind of physical by one of the aliens. Again, Parker doesn't feel fear during any of this. He's calm. Probably whatever injection he gave him, he emphasizes that a lot. He felt no worries. He was calm. He was at peace with the world. The beings, he said, wanted to be extremely clear that they, for lack of a better term, came in peace.
And she took her right hand and the two middle fingers on that. She started running down my throat. Well, I got to choking. And I was having a hard time breathing. Well, she took out her fingers and just kind of stood there and kind of looked at me. Now, she didn't say nothing, but mentally I felt like she said, we're not going to harm you.
Both men were deposited back on the riverbank and the spaceship just flew away. And it was over. That was it. And again, it sounds like the quintessential alien abduction story. The men, shaken, told police that they initially decided not to report the incident. Instead, because it was so late, they went to the local Mississippi press office to tell the press about it. Because the press office was closed, it was late, they decided to come back to law enforcement and maybe tell them to create some kind of report. Glenn Ryder, who took the men's story, later told press that he was initially skeptical and suspected a prank, but the men seemed so shook about the whole thing and so extremely sincere. Parker kept wanting to pray during the visit to the police, thinking that what he experienced was an act of spirituality. Quote, "With all I've went through on this earth," Hickson said to Ryder, "why should I have to see something like this?" Ryder smelled alcohol in Hickson's breath, and Hickson explained to him that he had had whiskey, but only after the encounter to calm his nerves. This seemed to make sense to Ryder, who later told press that the two were absolutely not drunk. Officers then decided to just do this thing where they left Hickson and Parker in a room. They had been secretly recording them in this room, and they thought that maybe if the two were left alone, some kind of crack would appear in their story. They'd say something, they'd say how they shocked them or that it was all a joke, but they didn't. The two were still absolutely freaked out alone in this room, and their stories were consistent. In fact, they were sitting there not doing anything almost, still in shock from what they had experienced. Captain Ryder himself was shaken in regards to the men's story. Were they telling the truth? And if so, what did it mean? Because what Hickson and Parker didn't know was that this wasn't the first alien encounter Ryder had heard that night. More after this break. I love devouring a thriller alone at night, just letting my imagination run wild. Well, I definitely got what I wished for when I dug into Run on Red by Noelle W. Eiley. Oof. The viral suspense thriller that killed it, not literally, on BookTok is now available to you as a deluxe special edition with gorgeous stenciled edges and a beautiful foiled cover. Talk about a vibe, my friends. Run on Red is a survival thriller about two women driving down a remote country road when they realize they are being followed. They don't have any cell signal and there's no way to escape. What starts as panicked road rage becomes something far more terrifying. As you might imagine, I consume a lot of thriller content on TV, online, and of course, getting cozied up with a good book is maybe my favorite. But sometimes thrillers can be so, I don't know, corny. Many don't give me that satisfying setup or the scare factor that I crave, but Run on Red isn't like that. It's grounded with a good pace, the kind of scenario that catches my attention and makes me a little nervous, but like not nervous enough to stop reading late at night, you know? Ugh, I love it. If you're a fan of Freda McFadden, Karen Slaughter, or John Mars, this is absolutely your jam. Run on Red by Noelle W. Eiley is available February 24th, so be sure to add it to your online cart, your big ol' reading to-dos, and eventually your favorite book list. So get under a blanket, get comfy, and keep those lights on just in case, because you're going to love Run on Red. Around 11 p.m. on October 11th, 1973, a service station operator named Larry Booth had called the sheriff to report something very similar to what Hickson and Parker had, a strange craft with a blinking colored light that was passing above him. At that point, Ryder shrugged it off as nothing, but after the men came into the station and told their story, well, now it maybe began to be something. The next morning, the Mississippi Press of Pascagoula reported on that quote-unquote something, and the Associated Press and United Press International picked it up for worldwide distribution. That afternoon, the two men scheduled a press conference retelling their exact same story. The two men were also examined at Kessler Air Force Base, cleared of radiation exposure, and released. There were also many skeptics, of course, as there were believers in their abduction, but the sincerity of the two men seemed to charm the masses. These two grizzled Southerners, skeptics themselves in most ways, were saying what happened to them was definitively and undeniably real. UFOologist James Harder and debunker-turned-promoter J. Allen Hynek even traveled to Mississippi and interviewed Hickson and Parker, separately under hypnosis. Hickson's interview is what you heard at the beginning of this episode. To the shock of Ryder and Mississippi officials, Harder and Hynek told press that the men's accounts were likely based on, quote, fact. These men have had very real, very frightening experiences. They are absolutely honest. They've had a fantastic experience. So, given all of this, what do you think? Is it real? Is it not real?
I think that two things can be true. Something cannot happen and someone can believe that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, telling it off, How many times do you think when a police officer asked somebody, are you drunk, that person said no and they were lying in the history of when it
happened? Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I don't think there's ever a time where they're just like, yeah, I'm drinking. It's cool. I love it. I think there's a little bit of, you know, where you can believe something and see, you know, you can see something and then you can make, your mind can make logical, like these kind of like leaps that this happened and this happened. And maybe I fell asleep for a few seconds and I had a dream that something happened. And when I woke up, that dream seemed very, very real to me. And I feel like all these things kind of, I mean, 1973, I mean, that's pretty early on in like the, you know, when we're talking about UFO stuff, but the 1970s was like hypnosis.
Oh, yeah.
New age stuff. You didn't have to like really dream any of that up. It was really kind of given to you.
Mm-hmm.
So do I believe that it happened? I'd be curious to know. I'm always curious to know, like, the lives of these people. How many times have they? Is this the first time they've ever said, "Oh yeah, I saw a UFO."
Yeah,
this is the 19th time I've seen a UFO, and this is this the time that like everything kind of happened where people were interested in kind of keeping this going.
Mm-hmm.
Do I believe them that they think they were abducted? Sure.
Yeah, you believe in the thought that they had.
Yes,
for sure. That you believe in their belief.
Yes,
you would say.
Also, are they religious? And if you're religious, you might
more like open.
You might be willing to make those leaps in your mind. Perhaps if you are religious, is just something else that I'm including.
Yeah, yeah. And I think too, you know, in a vacuum, late at night, these two guys, they were out fishing at night. Like, what do you do when you fish? You drink a lot of the time. Like in the cultural scenarios that I understand.
Fishing is usually, like an early morning. Like we get up at 4 or 5 to go fishing, not like, hey, do you want to go fishing at like midnight?
Yeah. And also the age gap between the two people. It's like, okay, a 45-year-old and a 17-year-old are there spending time together, their love of fishing or whatever, you know? And it's like, oh, you could see how maybe if someone believed something a little bit more than the other, maybe that would persuade the other person to kind of go with that story.
Yeah. Or they're just lying.
Or they're just lying.
When you go, you're like, quick, we're just two fishermen. Let's go to the press. Right?
Straight to the press. Well, that's very interesting that you say that. So by October 24th, press compared the case to the Betty and Barney Hill case, which we know we covered this an episode. So just to recap that episode, which you should go back and listen to, it's really fascinating. Barney and Betty Hill were an interracial American couple and civil rights activists who claimed that they were abducted by extraterrestrials from September 19th to 20th, 1961. Do you remember that case?
Yeah, that's one of the first ones and one of the biggest ones.
Exactly. And that kind of ushered in a lot of these other things, or at least the acceptability of people going to the press and talking about it.
A little bit of a blueprint.
Yeah.
For these future ones.
I mean, if
that's what the skeptic in me is saying.
Exactly. But the believer might be like, there wasn't a lot of, you know, if you had not heard about this, a lot of these stories sound similar to the Hill case, but also would they have known in rural Mississippi?
I'm absolutely taking that for granted. Like, the access of information and the lack of it back then.
Local press reported that the two men had not been seen at their workplace, prompting speculation that they were being paid to tell their story. And on October 27th, to dispel that rumor, Hickson took a polygraph test. The local polygraph examiner who administered the test concluded Hickson, quote, told the truth as to what he believed, cautioning, quote, we do not say a spaceship landed or that creatures emerged from it. Parker, however, refused to take the test at all. Interesting. Hickson appeared on the Dick Cavett Show to tell the truth and the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson telling his story. It seemed to be the pinnacle of press around the matter, and yet other firsthand accounts around the Pascagoula River would also fuel this fire, including on November 8th, a fisherman and his 14-year-old son told press that they saw an illuminated object underwater in that exact same river. Things just keep getting stranger. In January, Hickson was arrested for public drunkenness after being found wandering along a highway. April, he told the press that he was in ongoing contact with the beings, having had 3 different encounters. Hickson teased that the beings would soon provide a message along with proof of their existence, which he would relay to Washington. Hickson spread the gospel of his encounter, now encounters, for everyone that would listen. In fact, he became a bit of a UFO celebrity, while Parker preferred hanging back and returning to his regular life. Of course, there were many non-believers. Skeptic investigator Joe Nickel wrote that Hickson's behavior was, quote, questionable. Nichols speculated that Hickson may have fantasized the alien encounter during a hypnagogic waking dream state and suggested that Parker's corroboration of the tale was likely due to suggestibility because he said in some interviews that he, quote, passed out at the beginning of the incident and failed to regain consciousness until it was over. And yet, Jackson County Sheriff's Captain Ryder still staunchly believed that the two men were telling the truth. He told the Washington Post in 1975, quote, if they were lying to me, they should be in Hollywood. So, given that new information, has your belief changed around it? What are you thinking?
It's made me more of a skeptic. Of course, it was, you know, when you're like, I'm getting some attention of this. And eventually that attention runs out because it's like the story's over. Then you're like, oh, wait, but wait, there's more. It's always, but wait, there's more when you're getting attention or maybe you're making money or it's giving you some kind of identity. What do you do when you stop? I was like, well, we heard this story. It's like, wait, but there's three more times.
Exactly. I'm going to relay a message to Washington, D.C. now that I am the direct contact with the alien
beings.
And
of course, the sheriff, could also believe it, but who wants to say, like, no, I was duped. I think I was duped. And they also want to be part of the story. People like being, I mean, I think there's an inherent, like to being ass and part of something bigger than you already are.
Yeah. And again, you talked about faith, too. I bet that hearing the excitement around these stories and having all this attention, it kind of accesses a point of faith also where it's like, oh, maybe there is something bigger than us. Maybe if I believe in this, which is also very exciting, kind of sexy, maybe that creates more order in my own universe and my own religious belief system and whatever. And then also interesting that Parker didn't say as much, right? So one person was more vocal. The other person was like, maybe not.
Because if two people are talking, the stories won't line up. Or the odds of the stories not lining up in a significant way increases.
Yeah. And also what you believe at 17 versus decades later could be very different, you know. In September 2011, Hickson died of a heart attack. He was 80 years old. In 2018, again, much later, Parker, who had been diagnosed with terminal kidney cancer, decided he wanted to finally share his truth in its entirety. Parker released his book entitled Pascagoula, The Close Encounter, My Story, which is, quote, the first full account of the event given by Parker along with how it affected his life. In it, he asserts that the two had been abducted and that the whole thing was completely real, not made up, and that all of this haunted him his whole life. He then began giving interviews, some of which are in this episode. On June 22, 2019, a historical marker was unveiled at the site of the alleged abduction, funded by the local historical society. Parker attended the unveiling, as did Hickson's son and family. Parker stated, quote, it is emotional for me. I can't really describe it because I would break out in tears if I do. I wish when I died I could be buried right here underneath this plaque. That would explain it best. It is quite an honor. Parker died from kidney cancer in August 2023 at the age of 68. In his 2019 interviews, he clearly wants to set the record straight. The city of Pascagoula also hosts a festival every year in October to mark the anniversary of this incident, and the plaque still stands commemorating the encounter. It gives Pascagoula residents hope that something might actually be out there, something peaceful and intelligent, observing us from the great beyond.